Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. Hey, I want to give a real quick shout out to my friends over at Terra Grappler. If you've never experienced Terra Grappler wrestling shoes, then you're missing out. You see, Terra Grappler has been re-engineering the standard wrestling shoes for about the last 3 years. Their comfy and stretchy Mattiform integrated sock-like layer, it's something you can't live without once you've tried it. I use Terra Grapplers, Zahid Valencia uses Terra Grapplers, and all I got to say is this, there's certainly something different to the feel versus traditional wrestling shoes. And for those of you listening now, you can actually get $10 off a pair of Terra Grappler wrestling shoes by using the code COACHP10. The code is COACHP10. Experience them for yourself. I promise you won't be disappointed. All right. Hey, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. Man, I am pumped. I have one of my good friends and one of the most elite jiu-jitsu athletes in the nation, but really in the world. Brian Bury is on with us. A little bit of his background. He was a college baseball player, got into jiu-jitsu. We're going to talk about that story in a little bit. But he's a black belt, owns his own academy. And I'm just going to go through some of his accomplishments real quick. So 9-time Grapplers Quest Advanced Division Champion, 17-time Naga Expert Division Champion, Montreal Open First, No-Gi Pan Am Silver Medalist, Abu Dhabi World Pro Trials Champion. And the list goes on and on. And we were just talking off camera a little bit. Brian has literally competed against, he's trained with and competed against the best of the best, the who's who in the world of jiu-jitsu. So, Brian, man, thanks for being on.
Hey, Coach, thanks for having me today.
Yeah, you bet, you bet. So let's just start here. A little bit of your background. Like, tell us about where you grew up at and maybe, you know, kind of how you got into sports and some of the sports that you played.
So I grew up in Cohoes, New York. It's a little town just outside of Albany, which is the state capital. So we're like 3 hours north of New York City. I got into sports because in my family really didn't have an option. My dad was a college basketball coach. Him and my mom both played college basketball. My sister played college basketball. And when I grew up, I chose baseball, but We didn't have much of a choice but to be athletes. Even my little brother's a pro soccer player now. He played soccer in college. So it was kind of what we did together. I told you before, but even looking back, like when people ask me if I miss baseball, not really. I think looking back, what I enjoyed most was like playing with my parents or my brother and sister. Like that was what we did. My dad used to take me to the cages a couple of times a week. My mom would always be in the yard playing baseball with us. So that's what I miss about it, or like hanging out with my friends. It's not necessarily the sport.
Yeah.
That was just how I knew how to get through life. It was how I made friends. And since then, jiu-jitsu has kind of taken that role over. So
Yeah. You and I are both coaches' kids. So, you know, my dad being a coach, your dad being a coach. It's a little bit different world being a coach's kid, you know, and I think immediately, like if you've been in that space, like you understand that. And it's pretty cool because my parents weren't necessarily like big time athletes. My dad was a big time coach, but I was just thinking as you were talking, I'm like, man, I guess that's what my kids live in, because my wife is a really good coach and I coach, and our life is kind of sports all the time. You know, we let our kids pick what they want to do, you know, when it comes to sports. But yeah, so I guess that's what we do as a family, right? So it's a sports world.
Yeah, it was always a way for us to do things together. It was never forced on any of us. We all kind of picked our own thing. Like I said, my sister played basketball like my parents, but I went with baseball. I quit basketball in high school because I didn't like it. And everybody always thought my dad would be mad at me for that because he was a coach. And he didn't care. He likes baseball better anyway. And my brother went the complete opposite direction and played soccer. And it was just whatever we kind of wanted to do. You know, they never forced me into anything. I remember a conversation with my dad. It came up the other day because I was telling one of the guys how if they win or lose or don't even want to compete, like, I don't care. I'm here to help them with whatever they're trying to do. And my dad, that's how the conversation came up. But I was probably 16 and I was talking to my dad about, you know, not wanting to play basketball anymore. And he was like, Brian, you could quit every sport there like that you play and just go focus on other things in life. And I don't care. I'll be happy that you're doing what you want to do. And it's always good to hear that and not be, I think when you're not forced into it, you definitely excel a little more because you want to be there.
Yeah. Now that's huge. I mean, youth sports, there's some highly valuable things about youth sports, but, and I think most people know youth sports today can get just wild and crazy. And, you know, you got little kids that are practicing and competing 5-6 days a week, sometimes in 2 or 3 sports at once. But, you know, in baseball, I mean, look at baseball. You got kids that are, I don't know, 9 years old and they're playing 130 games in the summertime. And it's just nuts, man. And sometimes it wasn't really their choice, right? And even if it is, I mean, I had a Division I coach, it's a good buddy of mine, say this once, and it made sense. He was like, I talked to parents about these things and the parents like, oh, well, they want to. And he's like, yeah, but the kid's 9. Like, he also wants to get up and have a candy bar for breakfast. Do you let him do that every day? And I was like, that's a good point, right? So
yeah, that's a good argument.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that either. Cause I think we see kids become better athletes when they do play multiple sports, mm-hmm. instead of just focusing on one where they're going to learn those skills. But I think, you know, I look at like things playing football helped me with playing baseball or basketball, like learning how to move differently. Helps you to be creative a little bit and makes you just a better athlete in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think that, as I train people from a lot of different sports, you know, with mindset training, but also like physically, I have all kinds of athletes that I work with, and the athletes that have, and maybe at some point they kind of specialize, but the athletes that have done multiple sports, they tend to just kind of be better athletes overall, man. You can just see it in their movement patterns. You can see it in the way they function, and each sport has its own unique mindset. And I think that helps you in other sports, but you kind of mentioned, and I think that's awesome, the conversation with your dad, because once you decide that you want to do something, and that could be sports, it could be art, it could be whatever, and it's your journey, it's much easier to go and do the things it takes to be really good at it, because you want to do those. It doesn't mean it's easy every day, right? But you have a passion for it. As parents, or I guess just in as coaches, sometimes we got to like force people along sometimes, but you know, to get them to see the value and learn mental toughness and all those things. But ultimately, I love it whenever like one of my wrestlers will say, all of a sudden just decides like, this is what I want to do and be good at it. You can just see the switch, man, because now it's their journey. And now it's almost like you got to pull them back sometimes instead of always having to kick them in the rear.
Yeah, exactly. It was definitely nice knowing, like you said, like that it was mine. I wasn't being forced into it. And I think too, that's kind of why I gravitated towards jiu-jitsu so much. Cause like I was the first one in my family to be like, yeah, I don't want to play in college. I want to go and focus on a martial art or on something completely different than what we've done our whole life. And it was 100% mine. No, but like, and not that they weren't supportive, they were very supportive, but it was completely outside of the norm for my whole childhood.
Yeah. Well, tell me about that transition. So you're playing college baseball and like, how did you discover jiu-jitsu?
So as a funny one, I was a senior in high school and my dad, I was getting ready to play college baseball, and my dad told me he used to send some of his players to boxing classes because they help with their hand and foot speed a lot. So I was like, oh, I can do that. Help me get ready to play in college. You know, I want to be ready when I make that transition. I went with one of my friends, and we missed the boxing class. We got there late because I wasn't driving. If I was driving, we'd have been an hour early because I'm a pain. We got there late and we ended up missing the class, but they had a jiu-jitsu class going on. There was like a little club where they trained a couple times a week. As a guy who was a purple belt at the time running it. And my friend talked me into trying it. I didn't want to do it at all. I was watching these guys warm up and they were, you know, on the ground in between somebody else's legs. And I was not comfortable with that idea. I was like, it doesn't look like anything I really wanted to do. And then a year later, I quit college baseball to do that full time. And my friend that talked me into doing it, he comes into my gym every now and then, but he only trained with me for like a year, and then he stopped completely.
Yeah. Now, once you decide that you wanted to really pursue this, I mean, what was the path like? What do you do to become to achieve a black belt, but then to be like a professional jiu-jitsu athlete, which is what you are?
At the time, it was not where I lived. It was not easy to train like that, like full time. You know, there's a lot of gyms now, but back then there was really only a few spots to train, and most weren't every day. So I used to train up here, and then I would supplement it in like a few days a week, drive about an hour and a half, 2 hours down towards New York City to train. And I still do that now. My drive has progressively gotten farther over the last 10 years. But I used to always drive 3-4 days a week to train. And I would always try to train, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day, whether it was drilling by myself. You know, I always have dummies around hanging that I can drill on, just to work on things or doing conditioning or watching technique. And then at least 2 to 3 hours would be with my coach or with my training partners. Back then, I used to do a lot of private lessons because I'm a terrible student. Like, as a coach, I'm my worst nightmare. I can't, like, for whatever reason, when you're talking, I'm spaced out. I'm the guy that after the coach has shown the technique and asked if there's questions, I go to my partner. I'm like, hey, what the hell did he just show? So I always would try to do private lessons, or I would volunteer to be the dummy for the private lessons so that I could, you know, learn. Because if they were showing it on me, I could learn it really quickly. I'd do it twice and I could do it perfectly. It was more the focusing on them talking to me that didn't go well. I've gotten better at that now, but like I said, at 19, it was not a strength of mine. So private lessons was how I learned most, or I would ask them if I could be the dummy for class so that I had to pay attention because they were using me to show the technique, and that always helped me to focus a little bit. And at least if I felt it, I could figure it out and do it. And if I watched techniques online, I could figure it out and do it because I was focused on that because it was what I wanted to learn. But in class, a lot of times it was, I don't know how to, we weren't going over what I was trying to focus on that day. Mm-hmm. So I was just not there. I was in my head thinking about what I was going to try to do all day. So luckily I had some patient coaches.
Yeah. I know one of my college coaches said at one point, he said, I wish I could take and this was wrestling, but he said, I wish I could take every wrestler and make them go and coach for a year and then come back and compete again. He said they would be a much better competitor. And I know, like, once I was finished with college, I was finished competing. I started coaching and I did some camps and stuff along the way while I was in college where I was a clinician. But once I started coaching, I became a much better wrestler. And whenever you're teaching things all the time, you're talking about it. And I'm pretty certain there were many points in my life where I was like you, or I was that guy that coaches were talking, I was completely spaced out because it wasn't what I wanted to work on or whatever. And so, you know, on now on the other side is the coach. I get to see that and like, dude, focus. You see what somebody's not, you know, but I think that being a coach or being the one who teaches it, and also everyone learns a little different, right? So some people can just watch something and do it if it's what they want to do. Some people need to feel it. Some people need to drill through it. But it's good to know those things about yourself, how you learn best, because then you can try to put yourself in those situations.
Yeah, I've definitely learned that over the years coaching. I've had my own school for 7 years now, so I've had time to learn all of that. I didn't focus on it as much when I was teaching for other people, like at other gyms, which I wish I had, but I was young and didn't realize that. When I was a younger coach, in my head, I was like, okay, I'm saying it how I would learn. Why are they not picking it up? But also, when I was younger, I was also always really nervous about coaching in general or teaching. I started teaching as a white belt or blue belt, which I don't think should happen. It's just the situation we were in back then. And so I was 18 or 19 in a room full of 25 and up. I was always the youngest guy in the room. It would make me really uncomfortable teaching. And so I would show it how I learned, thinking that all these guys out there older than me, they're smart, they'll pick it up. And again, once I got more experience, probably around when I got my black belt, around when I was like 22, 23, I started to realize that not everybody learns like me, which is, like you said, really important to learn as a coach.
Yeah, it is. It's huge. It's so, you know, I've been to so many wrestling camps and clinics and stuff all around the nation since I've been a little kid. Sometimes you get a guy who maybe was an okay wrestler or whatever, but he's a really good coach or teacher. Sometimes you get a guy who was a great wrestler, is a good coach and teacher. But it's funny because I don't know how many times I was at a clinic and this guy had a big name, and maybe he was a college national champion, or maybe he was on the U.S. Olympic team, and he goes out to show technique and he's just terrible at showing technique. And the thing is, like, he knows how he does it, but he's never had to stop and really think it through to teach it. And I was that way coming out sometimes too. There were times where I would show something and I could see like all the kids looking at me like, we didn't get any of that. And so you really have to go back and think and like go step by step and break it down almost like you were a beginner. And then over time you begin to learn like what works as a coach and exactly how you should teach things and the details that maybe you wouldn't give out, because in your mind they should just be a basic, but to a novice or someone just learning the technique, that's not a basic thing. You know, so yeah, it's an art and a science at the same time, coaching is.
Yeah, I see some of my instructors that I'm trying to, I guess, teach them how to teach so that when I'm away or when I'm out competing, they can be here and run class. I see them making those same mistakes that I did coming up as an instructor. So it's nice, like you said, you got to learn to really break those things down and show the bigger details. And like, I see them show a detail that I would never bother teaching, but then they leave out the important one that we needed to go over.
Yeah.
And so I enjoy, what I do is when I'm trying to help somebody to teach, they start in one of the classes where I'm in the building, but I'm either teaching another class or I'm sitting on the side, getting ready for my class later in the night, so that I get to critique what they're doing so that I can help them with those little things of showing them how everybody's going to learn from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is ultimately going to make them better at their own craft and what they do. So, all right, hey, before we move on talking about jiu-jitsu, you're also 2-0 in MMA, 2-0 in amateur boxing. What made you, as someone who was becoming a professional jiu-jitsu athlete, want to go into jump into those realms a little bit?
Honestly, when I started jiu-jitsu, I didn't realize that there were jiu-jitsu tournaments. Nobody at my gym where I trained was doing them. I thought that we did that to fight, to do MMA. And I was 17 when I started, so I had to wait. They had a law, they had to be 18 to fight back then. So I was waiting. And then I did a couple of fights. And then somebody was like, oh, why don't we go do this tournament? These are a thing. Why are we not doing that? And once I did one, I realized that was kind of what I wanted to do. I didn't really like fighting. Like, I liked the training. I loved jiu-jitsu. I really never liked hitting pads and doing the boxing work and the Muay Thai work. I did it because I needed to. Mm-hmm. I probably did it for another 3 years after I started. So probably 5 years total after I started doing more tournaments. And then I kind of realized if I wanted to be successful in jiu-jitsu, I had to pick. It was either going to be successful in MMA or successful in jiu-jitsu. So I went with jiu-jitsu. And the boxing fights, I took both of them. I did two because my first two MMA fights, I didn't throw a single punch on my feet and or get hit. I just went in and took people down and submitted them. So I realized at some point, if I wanted to do that, I was going to get hit and I needed to kind of go learn to get hit and learn to fight on my feet too. And I tend to learn better by doing so. Went and did it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I wondered when I was looking, and I know we had talked about that before, you fought some MMA, but you know, at what point in your career, I was wondering when you did that. So, okay. So kind of moving.
I was like a 19-year-old blue belt who just got thrown in there. Like I said, I think I said it yesterday, my game plan was I was going to pull guard in my first fight because we never went over how to wrestle. Mm-hmm. And then I learned a hip toss in the dressing room and I ended up hitting a hip toss in both rounds because the first fight I had, I ended really quick in the second round. Second fight was pretty early in the first round with a double leg that was, again, probably one of the worst double legs you've ever seen. But it worked.
Yeah. That's funny, man, just to be able to learn it in the locker room and go hit it on the fly. And yeah, we were talking about that yesterday. Coaches shouldn't, or people shouldn't sometimes, and both of us have cornered many MMA fighters. And sometimes you get someone that's an acquaintance or somebody else that rolls in, all of a sudden they're trying to tell your fighter like, oh, you should go do this or this, or they're teaching them a new technique, like 30 minutes before they go out and fight. You're like, bro, this is not the time to learn to teach. Like, what are you doing? You know, so, but it's funny because someone did that and you actually walked out there and used it.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely makes me laugh thinking about it because, like you said, yeah, it shouldn't happen. It was just so fresh in my head because we were pummeling. And I was like, hey, what's the point of this drill? Like, we've never done this. You say, oh, if you get two underhooks, just step like this and you're going to throw them. Like, okay, I can do that. And luckily I was a lot stronger than the guy and it worked because it was pure strength, probably very little technique involved in it. It was like, I just picked him up and turned. Again, looking at my wrestling now versus when I actually was fighting, it's kind of embarrassing seeing how bad it was.
Yeah. We have a lot of wrestlers and a lot of wrestling coaches that listen to this podcast. How much wrestling do you involve in your jiu-jitsu practice?
Me personally, yeah. Or my classes that
you
I teach?
You personally.
When I go to JTs, every round starts from the feet. And then I drill my wrestling every day, just because I think it's important to work on. I don't always use it in my matches. I tend a lot of times I'll pull guard depending on who I'm going against, or you know, if nothing's gotten started in a minute or two, I like to get the game going, so I'll sit. But this year especially, I've been working my wrestling a lot, and I like Greco a lot. I like throwing a lot. My coach, he has a gym right across the river from me, so I was going over there for a while. I can't make it a ton, but Joe Ucellini owns a gym right near me. I think Greco All-American, I believe. And he's helped me a lot with that stuff as well.
Yeah. Which is good. I'm an upper guy, upper body guy, my wrist, we throw a lot. And it's a world that a lot of knotted people, I mean, even a lot of high level wrestlers don't really live in. And so when they get there, sometimes they're not real sure what to do. And a lot of our guys are, and not that we don't train shots and things like that, because we do, but I'm a big believer in being very good at upper body. So that's a nice weapon to have when you walk out and grab somebody, because a lot of guys just literally don't know how to react.
Yeah, you're right. And when I was coming up in jiu-jitsu, we didn't work on it a lot. We didn't work on it until I was like a purple or brown belt. So now I make sure all of my students learn in the fundamentals classes at least a couple basic takedowns. So we start every class with one. They will learn to wrestle. I'm not going to have them trying to learn it at brown belt like I was.
Yeah. Now that's good. And, you know, everybody has their own strengths whenever it comes to jiu-jitsu and areas that they're good at. And, you know, I've watched a lot of film on you, and, you know, yeah, you're very good off your butt, man. I mean, your leg locks are money. Your omoplatas, man. Like, I watched you get some high level dudes. You almost got them with some go-go's a couple of times, and, you know, but yeah, you're nasty in there, but you're well-rounded. I mean, arm bars, triangles, and flow from one thing to the next. So without giving away secrets for upcoming opponents that you'll have, tell me, like, what's one or two of your favorite techniques?
I do love leg locks. I think somewhere along the way, I became known as like a leg lock guy, which I wouldn't consider myself. I think, like you said, I'm pretty well-rounded, but probably omoplatas and triangles are my favorite techniques. Something I started working on at white belt, the same setups I learned at blue belt, they've just gotten a lot more like solid, a lot crisper, but they're same basic techniques that I learned at blue belt or white belt that have worked really well for me for like 12 years, and I keep adding to them, but keep working on them.
Yeah, it's one of the things I love about jiu-jitsu. Wrestling's the same way, but it seems like I really see it in jiu-jitsu. But, you know, we talk about, and my wrestling team is known for being, I'm going to go air quotations, but funky. We do a lot of very unorthodox things. But all those unorthodox things are built off of basics. You know, sometimes people may look at this stuff and be like, oh, you know, they don't teach the basics, you know. Like, no, like every bit of that is built off the basics. So when you're talking about, you know, you learn those things at the blue belt level, those are, you learn these basic fundamental principles behind these positions. And then you get better and better at setups and finishes. And, you know, for every, you know, every action, there's equal and opposite reaction. Well, that applies in grappling. And so you just get to know, if I do this, he's going to do this. If most likely, right? If I do this, he's going to do that. And so you can end up being a couple of steps ahead of people. And so it's the same basic concepts, but you begin to get very, very good at them, to a point where, you know, if you were going against somebody who was, even against good guys, but let's say somebody fairly novice, you could do it at will almost, because your setups are so good, but they're all based off the same basic things. So it's one of the things I love about jiu-jitsu. You can really see that principle of the best guys in the world still like have these basic things that they do every single day. And then fundamentally that allows them to do things that may look very tricky or sneaky, but it's all like, you know, comes from these building blocks of basics.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I always try to tell my students, like when I try to show something that's maybe three steps and they end up doing it in 10, I'm telling them, no, you're taking three and making it 10. We want to take five and make it three, or we want to make it the least steps possible. And you're like, because they don't have the basic steps down yet, but in the basic steps, it should be three things to get to where we're trying to go. And I think it comes from what you're saying, like those basic building blocks.
Yeah. Efficiency. I'm a big fan of efficiency in grappling. I'm a big fan of efficiency in life. Like, I spend most of my time trying to figure out the most efficient way to do things. So, and when you do, it really pays off in the grappling world.
Yeah, exactly. I had that conversation with my fundamentals class last night of making things more efficient. I think we were doing like a knee tap, and they were trying to do this big, crazy, like strongman technique instead of just blocking the knee and pushing into it. So they couldn't step. They were trying to like lift. I'm like, guys, that's too much energy. Like, yeah. I want to be able to do this to the biggest guy in the room and not be tired from it.
Yeah. Yeah. I just had that conversation with the kid earlier today. He's a fairly novice wrestler, and he's like, well, if I do this and I lift them in the air and I do this, like, is that legal? And I'm like, well, not if you slam them, but let's just back up. Like, you'd waste a lot of energy. And whenever we're out here wrestling, it takes a lot of energy anyway. So we want to be very efficient when we're doing this. And the least amount of energy I can expend and get the same result, I want to do that, you know?
Yeah. So,
yeah. Something you learn young and then get better at along the way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Hey, well, let's move into this, man. You're very high level at what you do. You and I, we talk every week, man. We get to bounce ideas off each other. You are extremely intelligent as well. Tell me let's break this into two categories because they mesh together, but what are some of the things that you do? And I would call these like non-negotiables, and these things can kind of change over time, but what are some of the things that you do mentally to be the best jiu-jitsu practitioner you can and ultimately the best person you can, but what are some of the mindset things that you like, hey, these are things I got to do daily and weekly?
Journaling has helped me a lot with that. Definitely. That was one of the first things we talked about was, journaling every day with gratitude. And I do every morning, and that helps me plan my day, but it also helps me keep a clear focus for the day of what I'm trying to get done. And it helps me to stay out of my head too, because we all get lost in our head, but that helps me to reclaim my focus. I need to get this done for the day.
Mm-hmm. What, and then physically, and again, they go together, right? The mind and the body, they go together, but physically, what are the things that you do every single day? And it could be, you know, whether it's weightlifting or jiu-jitsu practice, like sleep practices, recovery, because I mean, how important is it to be able to recover so we can train at a high level? What are the physical things that you do on a daily basis to stay at a high level?
I lift like twice a week, train jiu-jitsu 5 days a week. But the thing I do every day is I always drill technique every day, just to either with a partner. I'm going to drill in a little bit before my classes tonight, actually, with one of my partners, or I grab a dummy. I have a mat set up in my basement of my house too, so I can drill there if I don't have somebody to come down to the gym to work with, to help me. Actually, that helps me more mentally than anything, because it's like meditating for me. It helps me clear my head. Get something that I can work on. And it's like I talked about earlier, where like hitting for baseball, like going to the batting cages was like a way as a kid for me to clear my head. Or I would just hit off a tee in the garage. It's kind of the same thing with drilling. It helps me to get everything else off my mind and just focus in on one thing and really calms me. So if I'm having a stressful day, it's something that helps me calm down a little and focus. And like I said before, reclaim that focus for what I need to get done.
Yep. Yeah. I just talked to my athletes about that yesterday. I wrote on the whiteboard in our workout room, daily dose. And I told them dose stands for anytime we're exercising or we're doing physical activities, you know, all of a sudden your brain is releasing dopamine and oxytocin and serotonin and endorphins, all those things. And it makes you feel better and allows you to recapture your focus. One of my assistant coaches pointed this out, and it was I'm glad he did, because it was, and I hadn't even thought about it, and it was great. But he said also those things, if you deal with anxiety or if you deal with depression and you exercise and all those things are released, it helps you to deal with those in a more efficient manner. And I was like, man, that is true, because we have so many adults and teenagers, right? And I was working with teenagers, but so many people that are dealing with those things. And for him, he's a real muscular guy too, but he's an ultra runner. So he runs like the ultra marathons, and he was a college teammate of mine. But this dude runs like the 100-mile marathons and all that stuff, but he runs every single morning and then comes and lives with us and wrestles. But he said it allows him to deal with those things better. So I'm kind of the same way, man. Like I got to do those physical things. And when I do, then I can focus and then I can achieve other areas better, you know? And I've been a big believer for a long time. If you do something consistently really well, it allows you to kind of do the next thing. And maybe it's because you're getting wins, right? And so you're getting a win, getting another win, but it allows you to kind of stay focused and to stay on track throughout the day. But those things, just because you do good one day doesn't mean it's going to happen the next day. So you intentionally have to do those things with consistency.
Yeah, exactly. I, that's why I usually will pick something I need to work on for the day, And it's usually in my journal too, that's one of the things I'm going to accomplish that day, is I'm going to get some drilling in. Cause like you said, that's giving you that win. It's easy. All I got to do is show up and rep something out, either like with a partner or with a dummy. And that's the first victory of the day, you know? And it makes the rest of the day go by a little easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So you've competed against the best of the best out there. Tell me, like, who are a couple of your favorite matches? Like a couple of the guys you've went against that are high level, and like those matches always stick out in your mind.
My match with DJ, from Miami Open was a really tough one. That was a lot of fun. He ended up beating me 3-2, but it was close. I believe I finished the match in an arm lock. But DJ is really tough to submit. You know, I fought him twice, and his pace is great, and his pressure is really good. We've trained together too. And so that was a fun match. That one always stands out in my mind.
Yeah. And that's DJ Jackson. Yeah. For those who are listening that are not in the jiu-jitsu world, YouTube him or YouTube that match. I've watched it. It's a really good match, man. So, and yeah, DJ, he's a goer.
And I got some that have, you know, motivated me to train a lot harder too, that stand out in my mind when I've been getting tired in training. Like, I fought at the World Championships, I fought Tommy Langecker, and I had he crushed me, and it made me like, it was one of my worst matches out, I think. Like, I couldn't get anything going. He ended up submitting me from side control a couple minutes into the match, and that made me go home and rethink everything, rethink how I cut weight, how I train, how I, you know, how I play guard, because he kept passing my guard, and that doesn't happen too often. And so that one is always in my head too.
Yeah.
You know, like, just more of a motivating factor. And he's great, but I was not happy with that performance.
What are the things that motivate you? You know, is it, so there's another great podcast out there. It's called Jim Harshaw, and is the guy that hosts it. And he was a college wrestling coach and college All-American wrestler, but it's called Failure Leads to Success. So sometimes, you know, we take a loss and it really motivates us. Sometimes people are motivated by different things. What are the things that motivate you to be great?
Well, definitely matches like that motivate me to work a lot harder. But most of my motivation comes from, I love what I do. Mm. It doesn't take a lot to be motivated when you love what you're doing every day. So, you know, most days I'm able to just be excited to come in and drill and go to work and you know, work hard. Plus, yeah. I just like even doing the conditioning. I enjoy doing it. One thing that's hard for me to do is I don't like lifting weights. So I do have to find motivation for that. But again, it's not hard to find motivation when you have, you know, you're trying to be the best at what you love doing. So,
yeah. John, the author, John Gordon, he has a thing. So a couple years ago, the word grit became very popular. There was a TED talk about it and a book about it, and just that went through and researched top people from almost every category. I mean, it went from like the National Spelling Bee, the people that are winning that every year, the things that they have to do, going through and just studying the dictionary, like how boring is that, you know, and studying the dictionary yeah. over and over. But the top athletes in the world, the top military people in the world, you know, top businessmen in the world, they do things that are, you know, not necessarily sexy, right? They're not necessarily fun to do, but they have grit. Well, John Gordon kind of adds that. And he said, when you love something, like that's where true grit comes from, because it may not be the most impressive thing to do or the funnest thing to do, or like I said, the sexiest thing, whatever, but like, you're still willing to go in and do it every single day because you love it, man. Whenever you love it, it's a lot easier to have grit.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I try to explain too, sometimes to a lot of my training partners and my friends will always talk about like the grind. And I think we were talking about it. I have some friends that mistake that, or even my students that mistake the grind for coming in and doing the part we like, the or even the competing. That's the part we like. I think training jiu-jitsu is what we like doing. Otherwise, I don't think a lot of people would do it. I try to explain, like, the grind is not doing the part you love doing. I think the grind is doing all the things that you have to go through in order to do what you love doing. It's working the crappy job you got to do to pay for it, or to pay for your tickets to get around to compete. Or it's all the diet. I hate dieting. I'm cutting weight right now. I hate dieting. That's the grind. And I don't think the grind is doing the part that's like doing the fun part. I think competing in order for the guys that are fighting, like the fight's the fun part. That's the part you just went through all that crap to do. So yeah. that's not grinding to me. So I like when we were talking about that.
Yeah, it's funny you were saying earlier that I think I'm going to cut the clip and email it or text it to a bunch of my wrestlers. But you were saying, like, you drill every single day, no matter what. And a lot of my team is really bought in because it's just what we do. I mean, we drill way more than we go live. But if you're going to get great at something physically, you got to create those neural pathways, and it comes just secondhand, right? Because you don't have time to stop and think about things whenever you're out there, very rarely. So it's just, you got to go while that comes, because you drilled it over and over and over correctly and created those neural pathways in your mind. But, a lot of times athletes come in and, like, they just like, oh, I just want to, are we doing live? I just want to go live. Well, that's like the fun stuff, man. Right. So
yeah,
you gotta do the things that aren't necessarily fun to be great. And then whenever you do get to go live and do what I would say are the rewarding things, you're much better at those because of it. If you just always do the rewarding thing, and I guess that's a life principle, right? If you just always do the rewarding things, you're, for one, it's not going to mean as much. And second, you're not going to be as good at it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I tell my fighters all the time too, is they got to earn being in the cage, you know, or they got to earn going out and competing. That's the reward. Like you said, you know, we have a rule, like, when they're in training camp for their amateur fights, they have to be in the gym at least 9 hours a week, which for amateur, I don't think is asking too much. Most of them do more than that, but that's the bare minimum, is 9 hours a week. And they all have jobs and stuff. So I understand that's why I have it that low, but I don't think that if you can't dedicate not that much per week to coming in and working with your team and getting ready, then you didn't earn that reward of going out there and doing the fun part, you know? And if you're not going to dedicate your time to us working like that, why are we going to dedicate our time to you and go and be in your corner and help you get all this? I just think it's got to be like, you got to earn that.
Yeah, no, I love that you said that. And hopefully there's some younger fighters that are listening to this, or, you know, somebody who shared it with them or whatever, but you get those kids, or I say kids, but young people that are dedicated, that come in and they want to be great. Right. And they're putting in those 9 hours easily because they know, because they don't want to walk out there and embarrass themselves, and they want to be really good at this. But yeah, they got to think, like, they're representing your name, they're representing your academy. And then people don't think about that. Like, you're traveling to be their corner man. You're paying for whatever state you're going to, you got to pay for your card, right? To be able to go in a corner for them there. And you're usually paying. And when they're amateurs, you're not making money off of it. So you're spending a lot of money to go in a corner them, and they're representing you. So those guys are like, oh, I want to be a fighter. And they're in the gym like twice a week for an hour. And then they go out there and they get mollywopped, or maybe they happen to win one or two because they're just tough, you know? Like, dude, no, that's not how we're going to roll. Like, you got to be dedicated if you're going to do this and represent us, you know.
Yeah, I
don't have that mentality.
I have pulled guys from fights for that before too. I don't like doing it because I don't like being the guy that calls the matchmaker or promoter and is like, hey, they're not coming. But, and it, I always make sure it's at least, we know about a month out before I would do something like that. But I have done it twice. Not in a long time, because I did it early on when we made the rule. I haven't had to do it again because everybody knew right off the bat, like, oh, if I want to do it, I got to show up. I got to put in the work. But I don't think I've had to do that in probably four or five years at least.
Yeah. And that's good, because you built a culture, right? So you guys have a culture at your academy. And so let's just kind of hit on that real quick. You know, being a competitor and an owner, being a head instructor and owner, having your own academy, how do you make time for yourself and still be a good coach, you know, and do both of those simultaneously?
It's difficult. Most days I get to just train with my students, which is good, because I like to let them work, and that's when I work on my weaknesses or bad positions and things like that. I'm fortunate too that when I opened my school, I had a lot of higher level guys come with me, so I do have other instructors that can cover class for me if I can't be there or if I need to go train. And right now I have a guy who teaches 2 morning classes a week for me, so I can go down to JT's gym and train, who's my coach. And that's really helpful. And also it's good for me mentally, because it's 2 days a week where I don't have to be in charge. Mm. And I can kind of just be a student and continue learning. And then a lot of times at night when I'm training with my students, I look at it as active drilling. So I look at it as I'm going to pick a series and I'm going to work on that all night. And I'm going to force them to make the mistake where I can work on that. Or I pick a position, like right now I'm trying to work my back control. So every round, I only allow myself to finish from the back, so that I have to get good at finding paths there and get good at my finishes. That way I can progress even if I'm training with guys who aren't at my level. And it's getting a lot of positive reps, which is important, I think, too. And it's with resistance, because they're fighting like hell to not get choked.
Yeah. So it's good for your students to, and that's part of jiu-jitsu culture, but good for your students to see their professor in there working hard, training, going, knowing that you could rip some of their limbs off if you wanted, and you're not, but you're still pushing them and showing them what it's like to be a high level jiu-jitsu player and athlete. That's important for them to see that as well.
Yeah. I do my best to lead from the front. You know, I don't want to just tell people what to do. I want to be out there showing them, like, I wouldn't expect you to do it if I wasn't going to do it too.
Yeah.
Which I know we talked about before, because you go through all the workouts with your guys too. Yep. And I think that's pretty awesome.
Yep. So what are, okay, so you're cutting weight right now because competition season has opened back up, you know, with all the COVID stuff, things were kind of closed down. Now it's opening back up and you're prepping for some, you know, a few different competitions. What does that look like for you? And you mentioned earlier, you know, you travel a lot, but so you go down and you travel with your coach, or you go down and travel to work out with your coach, JT Torres, who is one of the best jiu-jitsu practitioners in the world, just incredible. So it's awesome that you guys get the two really high level guys training together, but tell me kind of what it looks like for you training right now as you're prepping for competition.
So Monday mornings, my goal is to do at least two actual training sessions a day. So I don't include my drilling with that, or like studying or anything like that. That's Mondays I'll lift, and then I'll train with my students at night. And usually I'll mix in some conditioning and I'll do a lot of drilling throughout the day, because I have the whole day. I can pretty much just live at the gym here. And then Tuesday mornings I drive down and train. We do gi at JT's Tuesday mornings. And then I come back and I train. I do my intermediate class that night with my students. And then I just teach the fundamentals. So I don't have to do, because after training in the morning, that's a lot. But we'll usually also drill for an hour beforehand. Like the guy, I think some of the guys are coming in at 5 to drill in a little bit here. Because some of the guys with fights coming up will be up there. But we do open mat at 5. And then classes start at 6. And that's the same on Thursday. So I go down there, we do no-gi Thursday, and then I come home and train gi with my students. Wednesday mornings, I lift, do some conditioning, and then I train at night with my guys. And then Friday, usually I do conditioning in the morning, and I train in my morning class with my students and my night class. And then I rest Saturday, Sunday. Because one of the biggest things I learned actually switching to training with JT was that rest is important. I used to train 6 to 7 days a week. And then when I switched to there, he kind of hammered into my head that we needed to rest. Like we had like mandatory days off from comp class. you know, which I think is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I always thought if I was resting, like people were passing me. And knowing that, you know, it's, if I'm going to recover and continue to train like an athlete, I need to rest. So now I teach Saturdays at my school, but I don't train. I just come in, teach and watch and coach. And then Sundays is my day off. So I have somebody else come in and teach, and I don't come in the gym at all. So that's like my mental recovery day. And usually me and my wife will do something. That's my day with her. So we'll go, she likes to be more active than I do. So we end up going hiking, or, you know, paddleboarding in the summer, stuff where we're out. So it's not really I'm not like sitting around doing nothing. We're out doing something fun, but active.
Yeah. Yeah. Active recovery. It's, I'm glad you said that. It's huge because especially in the day of social media, we see like online and we see these people that are successful and they're like, oh, you got to go, go, go. It's grind, grind, grind all the time. And then you always, and we talked about this yesterday too, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. It can steal your joy. So when you start comparing yourself to these people and you feel like, dude, I got to train 7 days a week, 10 hours a day, or else if not, I'm not going to be as good as they are. You know, I even feel like that as a coach. Sometimes I see what other teams are doing, but whenever you really study the high level guys and you see what they do, like you said, JT said, hey, we have mandatory days off. You begin to realize like, it's not just about grinding and that's part of it, but like it's being smart. And it's understanding human physiology. It's understanding your own body because this is your journey. And then building in those days because rest recovery, whether it's things like getting on a lacrosse ball or a foam ball or a foam roller or active recovery, all those things matter, man. All those things. That way you can continue to train at a high level. Because if not, and this goes for somebody running a business too, eventually you're just going to burn yourself out. And in a grappling sport, you're going to get so beat up, right? Your knees, your elbows, your shoulders, getting hit in the nose, ears, whatever. It all takes a toll on you. And then eventually your body just doesn't perform how you want it to perform because you weren't being smart about how you trained. So that's something that like people that aspire to be at high levels, they got to take serious, man. Like having some of those days built in on purpose. So then you can go hard when it's time to go hard and you can relax when it's time to relax so that you can go hard later.
Yeah, I actually see myself getting more out of my training sessions when I'm like now that we've added that in. I think I was down there today in the training session, I was able to push more because I rested a little bit yesterday. You know, instead of trying to go super hard yesterday, don't get me wrong, today was really hard. We were all a little beat up. It's Thursday, you know, by the end of the week, everybody's a little worn down, but when you're not going too hard every day, when it's time to come hard, you can give it everything you have. And I think you get more out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Being smart too, I think, and this is something I've learned along the way to coach, because I'm one of those athletes that like trained like a psycho and probably overtrained many times, probably led to some of the injuries and stuff I had, but, compound effect. And I've talked to my athletes about it the last couple of weeks. Like, okay, we're training like Monday through Thursday, we're lifting and we're wrestling, we're doing these things. Every day doesn't have to be like destroy your body day, because it's the compound effect. Those things add up. And by the time we get down on Thursday, you're pretty tired and beat up, you know? So then we need a little time off so that you can come back and you can do it again. You can progress. Then we talk about active recovery and the things that they're doing on their days off, but you know, in season, and this is out of season for us, in season, I mean, it's 6 days a week, you know, and, but being smart about how you train, because knowing those things add up and then eventually that either adds up and it makes you better or it adds up and it breaks you down. And so you got to figure out that fine line, because there is kind of a fine line there.
Yeah, it definitely, I paid for that early in my career too. When I first opened the gym, I trained 7 days a week, like most of us. And after a couple of years of that, it was like I was afraid to miss a day at the gym, and I was afraid things would fall apart without me. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I ended up having to have my shoulder repaired. I tore both my knees in the same year. It's all because I wasn't taking any kind of breaks. And as I, when I met my wife, she was the one who convinced me that I needed to have a day where I didn't even come in for like my mental health. I needed a day away. I remember our first vacation together. I was terrified to leave the gym for a week. I thought it would like fall apart, which is not a good thing to fear. And it ran great. And now once a year, we take a vacation together, at least once a year, sometimes twice. So, and I have complete faith in all the other instructors here that it will run fine without me. And I don't, it's also scary knowing that like they can do it when I'm not here. But, yeah. You know, it is nice knowing that the place doesn't burn down when I can go away. But for a long time, like I said, I think like you said, it led to a lot of my injuries because I was here every day and I wanted to, you know, show them that we should be training hard. So every day I was trying to train with everybody and roll hard every class. And, you know, learning that it's okay to rest was like the biggest thing for me. And I think I've gotten a lot better as a competitor, as a coach, just my jiu-jitsu in general has gotten a lot better learning that.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've talked about the vacations before, you know, going on vacation, the value of that. And I'm still kind of the same way though, man. Sometimes it takes me like, and I've gotten much better at this too, I guess, but take me a day or two to like actually relax on vacation. Cause I'm like, oh man, like these workouts are going on back home. I should be there. I got to be the example and I'm not there. And then when you know, now finally like relax and you get to vacation, come back and yeah, everything ran fine. And I have phenomenal assistant coaches who can do it just as well as me. And yeah, nothing falls apart. You know, yeah, whenever you're so used to like going hard all the time, it's a little hard to let yourself relax and just let yourself go sometimes.
Yeah, I'm not good at relaxing. Oh. So even we just went on vacation a couple weeks ago and I found myself like daily checking to see if somebody messaged me that anything went wrong or like checking the class list to make sure people were showing up and training. Cause we have a new app to check, make sure they're like a wait list so we can keep the numbers down when COVID started. But also it's good cause you see who's showing up and training. And while I wasn't here, I kept checking to make sure people were coming in and working. And finally I was like, I need to, after, like you said, after like a day or two, you can start relaxing. I was like, I need to put my phone down.
Yeah.
It was nice because we didn't have service most of the time until we got back to the hotel. So I couldn't do it till late at night.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good to be able to let go of that and you know, let go of the control for a little bit and kind of get out of my head.
Yep, absolutely. So, all right, brother, well, as we get ready to kind of wind this down, I always like to ask these questions at the end. You can answer one or you can answer all three and then expound upon them as much as you want. So okay. I want you to tell me about a hero, highlight, or hardship in your life. Hero, highlight, or hardship, or a little of each.
Huh. That's a tough one. Hero, well, I shouldn't say hero is easy. My father's definitely a hero of mine. You know, he's a guy who came up from New York City and, you know, made a great living here and through sport. He showed me my whole life how to use sports as a tool. That was, I sat through his basketball camp. He ran a basketball camp every summer. He still does, but he's run it since I was born. And he ran a camp every year. His speech was using basketball as a tool or using sport as a tool to get what you wanted in life. And, you know, he's a guy who took that and he got to travel the world because of it. I've been all over the world because of basketball, not even because of my own sports. And then growing up, I saw that. And, you know, I used baseball to help me get into college. I used sports my whole life to make friends. I used jiu-jitsu to make a living and to make friends, and to just interpret the world. It's so that's something he's taught me lessons since I was a kid, and he leads the way. He does it, you know. He leads by example too. He goes and shows it. Like so, to me, he's definitely a hero of mine. On top of that, he's been everything he's been through, and he just keeps getting up and continuing to strive for new things. And you know, he retired recently from coaching and he's already still running camps. He's going out to do clinics. He's you know, I have a feeling he'll end up coaching again at some point too. He won't say it, but I don't think he can stay out of coaching.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's always pushing forward.
Yeah. Having a dad who was a high level coach, man, it's a good thing. I mean, it can be really tough sometimes too, you know, but it's also a good thing. So yeah, I'd consider my dad one of my heroes as well. So I love to hear that, man, that, you know, and everybody's kind of got different heroes in life. That kind of hits me in the heartstrings whenever I hear that, you know? So, all right. Well, tell me, where can we follow you on, and I'll make sure I post the things in the show notes, but I'll have your Academy website in there, but where can we follow you on social media?
I don't even know my Instagram name. I think it's, let me check. Hold on. I'm really bad.
I'll find it and put it in the show notes so people can click on it and they can follow you.
My Instagram is Brian Beery JJ, so Brian Beery Jiu Jitsu. Facebook, same thing, Brian Beery Jiu Jitsu. And I don't have Twitter. Maybe I gotta. I'm bad at the social media thing. I gotta join. If I didn't have the gym, I wouldn't have any of it. So.
And then Brian Beery, jiu-jitsu.com, that's the website. So I yes. will, yep. So I'll put those things on so people can click on, they can follow you. And it's good because you put your focus into your training, into your academy, into your life instead of social media. And there's many, many days I like social media and some days I can't stand it. So I like being in places where I don't have service or things like that. Cause a lot of times I come back and when I actually get on my phone, I'm like, man, I was way more relaxed because I didn't have my phone.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and it turns into, like you said, I honestly we've had a lot of great conversations that you've helped me a lot, but I think the best thing you have ever said to me is comparison is the thief of joy. Sure. And you said it, yes, that's my favorite thing. Like I wrote it down on my phone, I have it. So I said it to myself 5 times today. Mm-hmm. Like it's I really like that, and that's exactly what we're doing when we're on social media. So I try to stay away from it, and I'll post on there every now and then. I post a lot for the school or for, you know, if things are coming up, but I try not to sit there and scroll because I don't want to be comparing my life to others, or even if I'm not trying to, that's subconsciously what comes about. I think more like looking, oh, they're doing this and this, and I'm only doing this. And well, yeah, I'm only doing this because it's what I have time for and it's what I like to do. Like, I don't like doing that or what they're doing. So,
yeah, those things are really easy to get into. And yeah, there's I guess it's like a lot of things in life, man. Like, if you use it a little bit and use it correctly, it can be a good thing, but it can very easily turn into something that's a negative and a stressor in life, you know? So, So you're a high level athlete and you're one of those people that are constantly adding and consistently doing the good things and then finding the things that aren't beneficial and kind of putting those off to the side, doing those very minimal. Cause like we've talked about before, some of those things aren't necessarily bad, but they can just maybe not be beneficial. So you're always kind of like taking like, hey, this is awesome. I'm going to do this. And this is not so good. So I'm going to put it off to the side. And I think if a lot of, again, kind of using sport as a tool, there's a lot that we can learn from that for just general life as well.
Yeah. You're right. Finding the little things that we can add, but getting rid of the things we don't need is really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, brother. Well, thanks for being on, man. I appreciate it. Can't wait to get this out to people so they can hear it. And then personally, I'm super excited for you to compete again. You know, and so for those who are listening, you know, you can go and just YouTube Brian's name, and I'll probably maybe even throw that on a little bit too. But you guys, if you're a fan of jiu-jitsu, you can get on there, you can watch some really high level matches. And like always, we try to take these principles from sport and then apply them to other areas of our life, whether it be relationships, running a business, parenting, and a lot of things that you're doing, Brian, are things that cross over and can help all of us, you know, become better human beings and better in the areas that we're passionate about.
Coach, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it as well. This was a lot of fun. I've never done one of these before. So
yeah, well, no, this is good. Yeah, this is good. So you are a super high level competitor. And like I said earlier, your intelligence, it's kind of crazy how intelligent you are. So people get to hear the thoughts from the inside, right? Because sometimes we only get to watch people and we don't really get to hear from them and to see what the thoughts are that go through their head and to get to know the deeper parts of them, which is cool from the relationship standpoint. And then also taking those things and applying them in our own lives, which is really cool too.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
All right, everybody. Well, that's been another episode of Coach P's Perspective. And again, check your show notes. Make sure you go back and take notes. Don't leave it up to your brain. If you heard something that you liked, put it in the notes on your phone or write it down so that you can have it and utilize it in your life. And until next time, may God bless you, smile upon you, and give you peace. We're out. Hey, guys, I want to encourage you to go over to bostonscally.com. If you wear scally caps, aka flat caps, apple caps, whatever you call them, whatever part of the country you're in, Boston Scally has the absolute best, hands down, quality, culture, and blue-collar work ethic, baby. Blue-collar mentality. That's what they're all about at Boston Scally. They also have fresh t-shirts, hoodies, things like that. But really, man, if you're rocking the Scally cap, go over and get one. Each one has its own story, and they all connect back to culture. So for me, whenever I'm rocking the Scally, I only go with bostonscally.com. And if you're going to order, be sure to use the code COACHP to get yourself a 15% discount. BostonScally.com.
Podcast complete. Now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins. Tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step. CSL rep, pop, lock and rock, Coach P, who never stops.